This is a new episode of Counterpoints, which means, obviously, we're not going to go into why that is self-evident, isn't it? But there's a new co-host for Counterpoints for this one. So rather than, look, this isn't on brand. Rather than get stuck in the past, Pimp, going on about stuff that's happened already, I want to now, in what seems like quite, again, off-brand sort of pivot, why not, let's just focus on the future and what's positive and what's good in the world, Pimp. Because what area I don't actually begin is, there's actually a secret piece of law that most people won't know. In fact, you and, funnily enough, Device are the only people who will know this information, which is when I actually did Counterpoints at the very beginning, it actually originally wasn't, unlike people will think, it wasn't actually originally a show with Moses. That came along later. What basically happened, I'll give a very brief history, is I just started the show Counterpoints when I actually used to work for that company called On Gamers way back in the day, which was like a, it was basically CBS, like the people who do the television in America, etc., have like an online, like interactive, you know, like entertainment wing or whatever that was all stuff like, you know, websites in the UK and US, including like GameSpot, which like reviewed video games and stuff. And they made their own esports vertical, which at the time was the thing, you know, you wanted to have your own esports site and stuff. And when I worked for them, I made the series Counterpoints. And I will just say, an obvious reason I did it is it's a pretty fucking fire name, isn't it? If you want to have a talk show about CS, it's pretty banging. Everyone else just chooses all generic names, you know, it's just something like, they go to the B site, it's just all garbage like that, isn't it? Right, so we all know how that works. So I thought, first of all, I don't want to waste a great name, I need that to bring that back. And then secondly, it did initially start just almost like my own vanity project. Like I actually just thought, because this was the beginning of CSGO, I think we even did this in like 20, I think it was in 2014, because I know this first episode that I'm about to reference was when the first French Shuffle had happened, the one where they made the Mercenaries LDLC team with Sharks and Smiths and all, and then they had like the Kaylee Maniac Apex, oh, I've said his name now, whatever. He was a fucking player, calm down, everyone. They did the one with Titan, etc. And what happened was, when I did this first episode, the original plan was it would just be me plus whoever I invited. It's more like, you know, Thorin just invites a few people to have a talk about CS. So it wasn't actually till years later it became the show with Moses, which, funny enough, if people don't know, was actually that when we first did By the Numbers with Richard Lewis, when he went to work for E-League, people might not know, he actually stopped doing a lot of his shows. He didn't do By the Numbers, for example. So at the time, we used to be sponsored by a famous fantasy company. And they were like, oh, well, we'll re-up for the next year. Just find a new co-host. And at the time, that's why I got Moses in. Me and him were doing E-League, so we're going to do that. And it turned out, actually, that sponsor bailed after that, because if you know like how betting stuff worked in America, basically like they initially allowed fantasy stuff, then there was like a big pushback against it, and they all stopped like putting their money into esports. And like, and actually, funnily enough, 10 years later, we're almost at the same position again, where it's all starting to come out again. So basically, that is all to say that when I first did this show actually taught me a valuable lesson I've shown so many people, and they only get it now, mate, which is, you know, when I did set it up as we were doing this right now, whenever I do an episode, it doesn't matter if every fucking meter shows the sound is right, if I can see all the images all correct, I always, 100% of the time, like some crazy OCD person, I always do a test record, and I always listen to that test record. And the reason why is because of that show I did. Because that was when I hadn't actually recorded many of those shows myself. Like, I used to, at the time, do interviews in real life, or if you had a talk show, when you work for a company like that, you can even have like a producer. I had like an American guy who sat there and he recorded it all for me, and I just had to be the talent, you know. I wasn't the guy who already recorded. So sadly, in the early days, without going into too much detail, I didn't actually have the right format selected to save the file on in OBS in like one of my first ever recordings. And so the reason why, to get cut a long story short, none of you know the following story is, that is the one talk show ever I lost. I did a whole talk show, an episode of Counterpoints, and the guests on it were Pimp, but it actually was the old Pimp, the one that's in all the, funny enough, probably the exact era of the photos he always shows there. There was Pimp, and there was Device, but by the way, before he was Device, he was just like a fucking up-and-coming Danish player who was pretty good for Copenhagen Wolves at the time. And we did this episode, so it's also funny, by the way, because aside from that ident he does my channel, like, you know, it's Device, it's a choke-free zone, he's actually never been on my content, because, spoiler, might blow your mind, Pimp, but maybe Astralis doesn't sign off on things that I really try to, yeah, really. That isn't it? I know, wacky how that works. And also, if you know how players are, during the time when they went downhill again, they were doing badly. Then they all get salty and don't want to do shit with you. And then the year later, when they're good again, they're like, oh, how are you doing, mate? That's just how players are. So anyway, that is all to say, Pimp technically was actually one of the first people ever on Counterpoints. It's just, it didn't happen. It got deleted. And then I just pretend that didn't take place. But the good news is, as I say, I tell you what, mate, I've never lost a recording since then. And I have done thousands of recordings. So a little bit of a note there. Yeah, a little bit of a note there to anyone record stuff. Always have safety measures, contingency plans. Because it is a bummer, by the way. Like, that was, obviously, as you can imagine, it was an early episode. It wasn't, like, the greatest episode ever. But it is a bummer to lose, like, some cool angle there. There's even a detail, by the way, that's actually funny, which is, if you had a device, you could even concoct the theory that I, like, intentionally deleted the VOD. Because on this episode, because they'd just done that French shuffle, and I was the biggest Existence fanboy ever, I think I even made a bet with device, like, oh, if these two teams, like, Titan will end up being the better of the two, which is obviously aged poorly now, because I think, first of all, Kenny was banned within about 2 months or something. And then also, LDLC just went on to win the, you know, a major. The core won another major after that. So anyway, he won that one. You win that one, device. You did win that bet. But let's get into it, Pim, because I'll actually say at the outset, I like to break the fourth wall a bit. Before we get into the actual topics, let's talk a little bit about doing this show. So one reason, Pim, I actually wanted to do this is, you're not part of any regular podcasts, I notice. Is there a reason why? You've made content, you've done all stuff online, you've streamed a lot. Why have you never been a part of, like, a regular podcast? Is there a reason?
Yeah, I think it's a time constraint. You know, I always wanted to do it, to be honest. I just never had the right project, the right idea, or the right timing. I think you and I, we spoke about it, like, was it a couple of years ago as well, actually, where I always liked the idea. I just never have had the time because of all the streaming, recording content, streaming from events, et cetera, et cetera. So I had to cut down somewhere, and that's always been on the podcasting side. But as of recently, you know, not streaming anymore, I've freed up some more time for myself. And the more time I get at hand, the more I actually, you know, desire to do a podcast. So when you came and asked once again, I was like, yep, timing is right. You hit it nail on the head right here. So may as well get to it.
And I do actually, like I said to you, I want it to be similar in the vein of how I was doing the show with Maniac, which is, I actually thought the thing that we made the show a bit unique was, everyone else is basically just caught up on Thorin's playbook from 10 years ago. They all now just make the shows like, you know, it's more like you're more like vibing with the crew, like Joe Rogan, of like, oh, what's Chad going to say to Yanko this episode? Oh my God, is he triggered from what Moses did? Oh, some drama in the city. They all cover all that stuff, which, by the way, is great fodder. That's what fans want to see. But it means that there's not actually that many shows left. I would challenge people to go and look out there. There's not actually that many podcasts that actually talk about the matches and, you know, like how well people are playing and stuff. People tend to talk about, like, public perception, how well good someone is, like, who would you vote? Like, it's all like opinion hot take material. So I actually wanted to do a show, as I was doing Maniac, where what we do is, so the first episode will be about I Am Cologne. We'll mainly talk about the big teams, the big topics, and we'll try and do it where it's a mixture of analysis and then sort of like maybe big historical narratives. But the more bittersweet, aside from when it's weaved in there, it's going to be less like, you know, talk show general stuff. It'd be more like us two analysing the game in a way. Like, almost think of it as like a post-game show or something after the event. So one area also I want to ask you a quick question is this, which is, I also do think when I do shows like this, I wouldn't just do this show with anyone, by the way. Like, if I actually could, if you hadn't said yes, there was a couple of other people I thought about. There's only about five people. If they all said no, I would just actually retire the name for now and I would just wait a few years for a talent to come along. Because I do also think if you do a show like this, you have to have some, it's really hard to build rapport from nothing. So I, in general, it's why I picked the people I've picked. I picked the people I know that I thought I have talked to about CS a lot in the past, but hopefully I can talk to now. And in your case, actually a positive you have, even though to a fan this might be a negative, is you in theory are someone who is always willing to have their own perspective and their own opinion. And I do think on shows like this, while yes, we'll do it somewhat respectfully, you have to be able to push back. If the other person ends up getting too influenced by one person, then it'll just ruin the show as well. Like, they can't just be repeating back to me what I'm saying. I can't just be like, fuck, well, he just basically said the opposite of what I was about to say. I better just pretend I agree with it. That's not going to be a problem here, Pimp. I feel like we're gonna both have our own set of opinions.
Yep, that's what I'm going to enjoy, you know, unleash it a little bit. You know, obviously you're constrained a bit when you're on the desk sometimes, but I think here we can unleash the pimp.
I have one quick question. Without making a whole big drama of it, I want to just actually touch briefly, since it's about I Am Cologne, you yourself were actually involved in a mini drama at this event, which is, it's one thing, right, for people online to flame you, to write things, to tweet at you. Look, that happens to a lot of people. Obviously, I've had it a lot, but plenty of people in the service, by the way, even lovely people who never say anything controversial get it, right? We all get that is almost like an occupational hazard of the business. But if people don't know, it's not just that people flamed Pimp. Some nutter, literally, almost like on some like political activism shit, took a, like a photo of you in like looking a bit silly. They wrote what, by the way, in the modern day would be considered like a homophobic slur on the bottom of it as like a flyer. Like I say, almost like some political shit. Printed loads of them, stuck them all up in Cologne. It looked like it was in some area where you have to like walk to go to the venue or something. And there was even a whole bunch like scrambled all on the floors of them. Basically, you yourself encountered this. And the story you said on Twitter was like, you basically, this is like the first event you chose to bring like your girlfriend to a dad, and you had to sort of explain to them like, why are they like images of you saying that, like, what was this? Give me the backstory on this, mate.
Yeah, it's kind of fucked up. As you said, like I think as you said, we all encounter a lot of weird ass comments from time to time. We all encounter, you know, the nutshells who go crazy on Twitter, Reddit, Agile TV. I've done analysis work and I've done events for 9 years now, I think, and I've never once encountered anyone who weren't nice at an event. Like,
yeah, that's the weirdest thing. People don't know, mate. I never get anyone. Yeah. I might have had like two people ever say something rude, and then it was like, you know, the trash talk. Yeah. No one. If people don't know, real life's usually the opposite, right? It's usually super welcoming.
Everyone is respectful. Everyone is coming to. Everyone want a picture, a signature. Nine years in a row. You know, never done an event where people haven't been nice. And obviously, Cologne was actually the same until. I think it was Saturday. I realized that I think the Flyers were getting stuck around and getting thrown around in the street, you know, in the mud and in the rain. And then apparently they printed at least 200 or 300, and they were just all over, you know, all over the area around the arena, just laying on the floor. You know, basically people would walk on it and it would be in the rain. So it had like a scuffy look to it. And I didn't even realize before. I think it was Sunday morning when someone started to send pictures of it to me and asked, you know, are you aware that this is going on, et cetera, et cetera. So I wasn't really aware. At the time, I didn't really care, to be honest, because, again, it's someone anonymous, you know. Obviously, no one want to put a face on that. No one want to, you know, stand up and say, I did this, you know. If they would have done that, then I'm sure we would have a conversation of some sort. So it didn't really affect me at the time being. But then, as you said, I brought my girlfriend, and my girlfriend brought her dad to come experience, you know, what I do for a living. It's not a secret. I think we spoke about that before as well, that I keep my lives very separated. I have my professional work, which is Pimp, and then I have my private life, which is Jacob. Nobody in my private life is from esports. I don't have a single person I would consider a close friend that comes from esports. I don't have a single friend even that comes from esports. So when I invite someone into my world, it's always a little bit, you know, it's weird because I don't normally do that. I want to protect the people close to me from the nut shots, to be honest. This time around, invited my girlfriend, invited her dad as well, and having to explain them, you know, why someone would do that and what that means and what kind of the lingo is in this world. And it's just part of the job. And, you know, I'm opinionated. Sometimes I say something negative about their favorite team or favorite player, and then that's the reaction. It's humiliating to me on a level where I hate that I'm part of a community that does that. I hate that I'm a part of a community where that exists. It's also naive of me to think that that doesn't exist. As you said, like, we all get it all the time. You open Reddit, you open HLTV, you open your Twitter. Daily, there's someone coming at you, and you get to a point where you know most of it. But when you face it and encounter it in real life, that's one thing. But then when I have to explain someone from the outside who's not part of this world at all what it's all about, I'm almost ashamed, you know. So I feel a bit ashamed, to be honest. Didn't really affect me personally. It was more so, you know, my girlfriend didn't think it was nice. Obviously, her dad was like a big question mark, which makes sense. And for that, I was a bit ashamed. And that's why I felt the need to basically, you know, take a stance against that publicly. Again, does that work? Who knows? But at the end of the day, I feel most people got the message that there's a line, and I think the line was crossed this time around. As I said, 9 years of doing events, no one has ever been disrespectful to me. No one has ever said anything negative to me. This was the first time something like that happened. But of course, again, it happened anonymously. You know, no one was able to put a face on that or claim to do it. So at the end of the day, it's just a fucking nutshot who, you know, I hope I never get to meet. But hopefully that was a one-time occurrence.
I'll even say I actually do think, just because it's like purely text, that internet comments in general actually dehumanize everyone. Like, the joke is, I actually do say the same things I do on talk shows and in real life as I do on Twitter. But on Twitter, everyone loses their mind. Oh my God, but he's a totally different person. It's like, no, you just can't see me like laughing, or you can't tell it's a joke, or something about the timing's off, or maybe you read it when you were in a bad mood or whatever, or maybe you're a super fan of someone. Because I know what you mean. Like, put it this way, the reason why I actually think part of it's the online medium that normally emboldens people is I've even had it the other way, Pimp. I've had people who in real life met me and were just literally like the 15-year-old fanboy. You imagine, like, can I take a picture? And they on Twitter have then flamed me. And when I see the flame, their profile picture was the picture they took with me at like MLG Columbus or something mental like that. So what's funny is, actually, this might sound weird, but I actually flip that. I don't, instead of thinking, oh, that's fucked up, in real life they pretended to be nice to me, but on the internet they were a dickhead. It makes me realise, one, I don't think anyone, even fans, understand how how they're coming across on the internet. And two, that's actually a feature, not a bug, that kid wouldn't do that to me in real life, mate. That in real life, he'd just be chill and fucking enjoy the... That just shows that real life is better than the internet. We don't have to fix on the internet. But I agree with you. The sad thing is that it's bled over into real life. I have a quick question for you. It goes like this, right? I would never ask the question, right? What do you think you've done that makes people do that? Because I think to some degree, that might imply to someone, like, you know, it's justified or like it's cause and effect. You did A, so they did B. Like, whereas I think what they've done is a massive, no matter what they think you've done, that I agree, that's over the line. And it's a ridiculous, disproportionate reaction to whatever they think you've done or whatever evil thing about you they don't like. But what I would ask is, I'm sure you've thought about it, do you have a quick theory craft as to why specifically do people target you in that way? Because I do think even though we all get it online, we all get it in different ways, if you know what I mean. Like Maui gets it slightly different to me, different to you. You always seem to have it a little bit though. So why do you think people, why is there's a type of person just latches onto you, do you think?
I mean, I think in this specific case, I think it's all the case of the whole, you know, beef that I'm having with Lubanica.
I've been following that. That's actually what spurred this, right? Okay.
I think so, you know, and I think that's what spurred, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote hate the last couple of months. His community is like, obviously, like I very much personally believe in something called the law of attraction, where if you are a fucking douchebag, you also attract douchebags, you know. And at the end of the day, you surround yourself with nut shots if you act like a fucking idiot. And I think Lubanica is doing that. So a lot of that come from that, you know. Most of the comments, most of the DMs I get nowadays are from people who also follow him or very much engage with his whole, you know, hate baiting of Counter-Strike.
Right.
In general, though, I think it, you're right. Like, I think the past 5 or 6 years, I've been very much, I wouldn't say a victim, but I've been very much, you know, outlined as a talent in our business that gets an awful lot of, you know, that kind of stuff. Whereas other colleagues of mine, take Mania as an example. It's not like we can't use his name, but he was always sunshine and flowers. Like, he was very good at playing the political game of being the nice guy, in a way. So he never got it. You know, no one really cared. No one really, you know, had an opinion about him, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. I think it stems from having done what I do for a long, long time, that you would eventually, over 9 years doing 20 events a year, you know, be negative or talk shit about your favorite player or your favorite team at some point. And fans remember that, you know. It doesn't matter if you speak highly of Furia 10 times, the one time you don't, the one time you actually give them the knife, that's all they remember, you know.
Sure.
On the side of that, streaming, you know, when I was streaming for 3 or 4 years, I was unleashed on my own stream, you know, in a sense that if someone came into my chat and said something,
it was spicy. I've seen a few clips over the years.
Yeah,
you know?
I would just call it out, you know, and sometimes, you know, also to something that I used to, I guess, reflect over myself, maybe too much, you know, maybe too unleashed sometimes.
Yeah.
But if there was a stupid comment in a chat or something I didn't agree with or whatever, instead of just politely saying, please go away or whatever, I would snap on them, you know, because that was the one place where it was, that was my, you know, you come into my home, you know, you come into to my place and you talk bullshit. So I think a lot of it stems from the stream time as well. And those people still hang around, still have that perception. And it takes time to change that. But I don't know. Recently, it's the whole Lubanica, you know, dick riding, hating on Valve. You know, for some reason, I'm being portrayed as the guy who takes all the
block money. You're the shill who pretends the game's all right and all that bullshit. I know, it's just nonsense, isn't it? I know.
It's so fucked, man, bro. I don't know if I ever told you the story. You know, it's like I did one tweet, you know, a promotional tweet, which is it's like part of the agreement. Everyone does it, and everyone has done it. For some reason, mine was singled out, and that was the one guy, you know, whereas there's people who have contracts with EFG and work for that company who has never been singled out, and nor should they, you know, because there's nothing wrong in that.
And I can tell you, I have a good memory for this thing. I can tell you, very beloved people like Get-Right did the tweet too, mate. There was a bunch of people who were like,
You know, I think Boris has done it. I think Pesha has done it multiple times as well. And
these are all fan favorites, mate.
Exactly. But when I did it, of course, I was the front page of Reddit for a week, you know, because I was the one guy we could now hate on for being part of that. So it's just, I don't know why exactly that is the case, but I think a lot of it stems from streaming and just unleashing myself from time to time.
I've got a little angle on this. I'll do a little bit of analysis of you and your interaction with the fans before we do the CS, right? Just to, you know, warm up the skills. So I've got two angles for you here. One, first of all, one of the things I see people keep bringing up, actually, they don't know they're doing a good job bringing up the real issue, but they're doing it inadvertently here, mate. Everyone you've seen already goes, essentially, they take like, oh, so a pimp essentially was in real life harassed by someone who's anonymous and is like fucking with his like actual like job, which by the way, isn't the same as like you said a mean thing and they said a mean thing back. But they're all trying to pretend, oh no, but you know, pimp's toxic as well. Have you never seen it on his stream? Like, yeah, but here's the thing. He didn't go to the person's house with like a fucking projector and a boombox and blast his stream into their house. Like, you have to choose to go to the stream to see that. Like, they're doing this in real life where you can't escape it. It's at the event you work at. And then also, back then, I know the clips they're talking about. Let's just say back in the day, pimp was the sort of person who, if he got annoyed, don't worry, I'm right in your category, mate. The difference is I've been caught as much. Oh, I'll tell someone to unalive themselves in Minecraft. Yeah, absolutely. But what should give it away is that I even just said unalive in Minecraft today, because in 2025, you can't say that at all now. That'd even get you potentially banned off Twitch. Back, all I'll say is this. 10 years ago, that was actually considered just like harsh banter. It really was. Like, yeah. I've even famously had this happen where someone once reported a tweet of mine from like 10 years ago where I told DDK to unalive himself because he's like a beta man, but I meant it like, oh, shut up, you fucking idiot. You know, it just meant that back in the day. So first of all, that part I do think is why they're doing it as well, pimp, because I have actually experienced that part myself, which is you get a kind of person who, I'm sorry, they must just be a nutter, where what happens is they know, they think you're toxic online, they think you've said weird things, but instead of just thinking I'll just do a tweet at you or I'll do a comment on Reddit or something, they almost think they're like the Punisher and they have to like hold you accountable in real life, you know, something must be done, and they think like they have to do some crazy act towards you in like to take you down a peg, which already that's a bit sinister anyway. But then the other thing I was going to say as well is I actually think in your case, because another reason why I find yours is so bizarre, is you get it a bit like me and Maui, but I get why me and Maui get it. We were never pro players. It's very easy to go, what the fuck do they know? You must just be saying that for attention. In your case, I actually think one thing that works against you is that you did all the weight loss and that you're like really fit now, that you have your life in a really good place. I think in a weird way that before they couldn't have talked shit on you in the game back in the day, so they could just go, well, look at you, you're just a fucking fat little nerd, aren't you? You're a loser. All you do is play. Back, by the way, back then, the classic thing that no one could say now is they used to go, ah, I make loads more money than you. You're making nothing doing this video game. But then that's aged very poorly now. We're all fucking killing it, boys. Like, let me know how many of you at your call centre make what we do. But okay, don't worry about that. Put that back on the shelf. So I do think part of it's envy, bro, in a way, because like, you notice how, if you ever notice the comments, they even get mad that you mention that you lost weight or that you used to be on a pro team. Like, bro, if they were on Team Liquid, they'd never shut the fuck up about it. We talk about if they'd actually played with like Dupree and Elise, do you think they would stop reminding us of that? Of course not. It's a totally legit thing to say, but it's fine. People can like rib you a bit if they're in the industry, but why that gets someone mad? I agree. There's something going. Here's the thing you always have to remember. Yeah, maybe the fact that you're willing to be bold and have your own opinion and critique, that'll get you some of this. But most of it is in their head. You know what I mean? Once you understand there's something wrong with them, and quite frankly, this is actually a good thing to remind yourself is, if you didn't exist, mate, they'd find someone else to latch onto too. Look, maybe in that sense, you're helping whoever that person is. Like, I even used to joke to people, one of the worst things that ever happened to me on the internet was Donald Trump no longer was in office in America, because I felt like all the nutters in esports and tweeting about politics, once they knew, like, there's no point tweeting about Trump, it was Biden, they just started tweeting about me. It's like, suddenly I became, like, Donald Trump of esports. Like, you're fucking dead. Like, oh, bloody hell, get it back in, get it back in. So anyway, I think there's some of that going on there. Let's do some actual CS analysis then, mate. Good. So first things first, I want to ask you this question, because I have been thinking about this for like two straight days now, mate. So Spirit just won IEM Cologne. So in theory, right, that means they could be the number one team. They could become the number one team. They might be the best team right now. Who knows? They just won. This is literally like the third biggest event of the year, or second. When do I know how you want to evaluate it? But what's torturing me is this, pimp. I genuinely can't tell if the Zwei guy actually added or subtracted anything from the win. Do you know what I mean? Like, normally, if you join a big name team like this, normally before this, we'd all say, actually, Spirit needs a piece to be able to win. They can't win events anymore unless it's like a PGL or something. Normally, if you win the event, you'd automatically assume he must have played great. He probably had an awesome day. I don't know if he did, though, pimp. Like, when I watch the game, part of me thinks, could Magics have just done that? And also, he had some pretty bad games early on. What do you think? How do you evaluate that part? Because it's weird, because I want to praise Spirit as a team, but what do you think of this addition, though?
Yeah, I think the answer's in the question, in the sense that, I mean, no, he didn't add anything, but he also didn't subtract anything in his first event, being, you know, 17, 18 years of age, you know, first time on a stage as well, big stage anyway. I think Spirit would have won the event with Magics as well, you know, and that's a thought experiment, and essentially probably not, you know, because they wouldn't have been as motivated, they wouldn't believe it in the same way. But in terms of the output on the server, I don't think it changed much, but that's a good thing. You know, your first event coming in as a young player, he's playing completely new roles, you know, compared to where he were before in Amiga.
And by the way, that was even confirmed. If anyone goes, look, I know the site also collects bullshit, but that eScore News website just collects everyone's tweets and interview comments. And there's actually one on there you can check where Halley from Spirit actually confirmed that he thinks that he did really well because they'd shifted loads of his roles and they didn't do what people thought before, which is putting one for one on like all Magix's roles. Like they swapped a bunch of stuff based on their own words, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, when you had the context in mind, I think he did well, you know. But I also think that doesn't rule out the fact that they probably would have won the event anyway with Magic's normal output. So I don't think that changed too much. And that goes into a deeper conversation that we kind of scratched the surface on the desk as well. I tried to bring out the narrative, at least, that to me, Spirit is all about Dunk, you know. And that's obviously fair enough when you are Dunk and when you are as good as Dunk. But I really, really do believe that that is a team that... they will never have a period like Vitality because they don't have enough, you know, support cast to support Dong. That will require Dong to show up with a 1.6 rating at every single event that he plays for 6 months if they were to win as much as Vitality in a row, because the support cast around him is not good enough. And I think that, you know, when Dong plays like he did in Cologne and when he did at the Major and Katowice for that matter as well a year ago, and like it's almost impossible not to win the event or at least be part of the final or part of the semi-final. And honestly, I feel you could put anyone in that position. Obviously, that's not taking anything away from Sway, because maybe with time in his new roles, he can get even better. And maybe that solves the support card issue that I'm describing right now. But the fact of the matter is that right now, you know, if Dong is having a game off, and by game off, I mean a 1.20 rating or a game where he doesn't find too much impact, most of the time, Spirit lose to the top teams. He needs to be at 1-4, 1-5, needs to have some crazy rounds to turn around the game and crashes the economy of the opponents out of nowhere. Otherwise, Spirit are not winning the best majority of the games against, you know, the top five teams. So it describes a bigger issue to me, but just the fact that you're asking the question whether or not Sway actually added anything is just a confirmation to me that it doesn't really matter, you know, at this point. Maybe in the future, he will grow into the roles better, and that would at least, I guess, make it better for Spirit and maybe raise the bottom floor level, so to speak. But for now, it's the Dong show, and Shiro for that matter as well. When they're playing well together, then, you know, there's only a few teams in the world who can actually beat them on a good day.
No, I know what you mean. Like, look, I wouldn't lose all, like, hope for Spirit. The hope, obviously, is that Sway just adapts and then eventually some of the firepower from the Mega comes in and that actually undercuts this issue. Like, it's less of Donk having a carry, because I do think that is the thing about all these tournaments that they've won with Donk that I think is actually underrated. Maybe it's because it just becomes about individual players and it all just degenerates now because there's no monarchy. It just becomes the Zero versus Donk argument. And that is nearly all people making bad faith arguments and trying to, like, find one angle that fits to go against or for their guy and ignoring like the bigger picture. But if you look at him in the team, bro, that B-Trams guy did a great job. The guy from like Maui's little group where he did a graphic where he showed all the classic carries. He even asked me for some of them to tell him some of the other ones. And he put in, you know, like Nico and Mouse Sports, the original one. Simple before it was like, you know, people like Bait and fucking Perfecto, basically like the 2018, 2017 type simple. He had everyone, even had K Serato and Furia. And what he showed a lot of Ziwu when he was on the good and the bad, the Misuta team, etc. And what he showed is, even Ziwu, and this says a lot, mate, even Ziwu on the fucking Misuta Kyojin one, which I do think is one of the most abusive lineups ever, where they also basically treated Ziwu like, just be the best player on the server every game, we have a chance. And you're like, the fuck, that's not anyone's job. But even that one, bro, see, in theory, Ziwu could still like have a bad game and they sometimes would win. The amazing thing about when he ran this stat was, Donk has a 0% win rate when he goes below 1.0 HLTV. If he ever has a bad game, Pimp, they've lost every single fucking time. So like, this isn't even just like, wow, he has to carry. He is just the ultimate super carry in the history of CS at the moment. And I actually agree with you. I even think that is actually unfair, especially because here's why. All the other teams that were in that position, mate, didn't really win the event. It's more like they had to like super carry to get you like a semi or, you know, maybe be in the odd fight or win like a small blast or something. This team, because they get to win the biggest tournaments, I actually do think in some fucked up sense that the org just thinks like, yeah, this is fine. Like my whole beef with the Kiyosuke thing isn't like, why did he choose Falcons or should he? It's more the idea that if I'm Spirit, it's like, You really are planning that Donk is going to get a 1.4 rating in every single tournament by the fact that you sell that guy. Like, look, if he does, by the way, if he is like Michael Jordan of CS, you're going to look like geniuses because you get the millions from Keizuke. You still have a team that can win the major and win the prestige. That's great business. That's actually fabulously done. It's just the problem is, I think that even if it's true, I think it's just like an unfair expectation for a player. Because I'm with you, mate. You could even see it in this tournament. The first map of the whole tournament, bro, they played that heroic team that's just changed out some Pius, who isn't even a top team, and they won 16-14 on Ancient Pimp, and he had to drop like a 30 bomb with like 100 ADR to win 16-14 over a team who, notice, you, everyone try and remember now how relevant Heroic was in this tournament. You can't even remember who they played, guys. Like, they were an also ran irrelevant team after the fucking play. Like, I think that's too much, Pimp. Like, even if he, here's the problem. If he does do it, he really does carry like this, then look, it'd be great for him individually. He'll be considered the greatest player to ever play fucking, like, esports would be the joke eventually. But I also just think, like, what way is that to manage a team? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's why I do think when I saw this movement, if I was Spirit, there's two ways I would have gone. I either would have tried to force the Keizuke angle and just be like, look, if we can somehow make the two of you coexist in the game, don't we win everything? You know, you fucking stay in this team. Or the other angle is, I would have just gone more with, like, I would have been the one trying to get a Perfecto or someone like that, you know, a bigger name doing similar roles, but like in the past has given you a little bit of fright. I would have gone to, what do you think of this? Because, I mean, he is doing it at the moment, but surely he can't really be expected to, because, mate, we're not even exaggerating the number. I think it'd be silly to even say someone has to drop 1.2 rating every tournament. This guy actually has to drop a 1.4, mate. Like, he basically has to be the best player in the whole world to win.
Yeah, when you say it like that, it does sound ridiculous, but the worst part is that the more you're talking about it, the more I think that he's probably going to do that, you know?
I know,
I think he is going to go down in history as the greatest player if he continues at this level. And I can't see why that shouldn't happen, to be honest. I also do agree with you. I think it's a ballsy way of running a team, but it also depends on, obviously, we heard all these rumors with Keizuke, you know, that he maybe didn't want to join Spirit because he wanted certain roles that Donk had, et cetera, et cetera. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It could also be a thing of, again, we don't know too much about the inner workings of Spirit.
Yes.
There's also a world where Donk is very satisfied with being the Donk in Spirit, you know, and where he's not willing to share some of the limelight with a guy like Keizuke coming in, you know. So if you're Spirit and you feel that, bringing in Keizuke is potentially going to mess with Donk's mentality within this team or potentially makes him unhappy, is that worth the risk of bringing in a guy like that? Or do we just cash in and then take one of the other 100 CIS players right now that plays Counter-Strike at a high level? That's also part of the story, I think. Had it been, you know, I don't know, a Danish team, Astralis or whatever, you know, you couldn't afford not bringing in that guy if you have a generational talent coming up.
Of course.
Because right now there's no other great players out there. I do think for the CIS region, it's different because there may not be another Keizuke coming in, but there's definitely players below him at a very high level that could always go and acquire. Perfecto, great example as well, even if you want some experience. So I don't think the risk is that high, given that there's a lot of talent and the talent pool in the CS region right now is incredible high. So I think it's going to be super interesting to see Spirit the next couple of tournaments, because I also do think that when you win Cologne, you win Katowice, you win the major, and you go fight all these tournaments, and you got a satisfied Donk. You know, Donk is not going to be okay with going into quarterfinals and lose. He's not going to be okay with being in semifinals and lose. So, you know, if they don't win, you know, another tournament at the end of this year, you know, whether that being the major or one of the other bigger ones, he will get to a point as well where he demands changes or demands something to happen in order for him to stay within that team and stay motivated in that team. Obviously, it's way too soon to talk about him maybe leaving, but his English is decent enough that he could potentially go international one day if he wanted to, already now, if not now, then in a year's time. So I think for Spirit, it's all about satisfying Donk. You know, I think he is the Michael Jordan of Counter-Strike. I think he is the Messi of Counter-Strike at the moment. You know, I think he's magical, and I think he's so goddamn good that if I ran Team Spirit and just ignored all the context of, you know, economics and whatnot, then my prime job would be to just keep Donk happy. And I think that's also part of the story when people, just to go on a side track right here, when people speak of Chopper as an endgame leader, I'm also myself a little bit critical in the sense that, yeah, they rely a lot on Donk. On the other hand, you know, if I had Donk on my team, wouldn't I be wouldn't I be the best in-game leader if all I did was make sure that he played well? Isn't that the way to win? Isn't that what you just showed in Cologne? Isn't that what happened at the major, Katowice, a year and a half ago? If you're the in-game leader, if you're Chopper, maybe your finest job as an in-game leader is to make sure that Dunk is 100% comfortable. And if that means that you play worse off and Shiro plays a little bit worse off or Sway is having a tough time coming into the team, so be it, because that's the win condition we have. So I think that's something that needs to be contextualized as well when people argue that Chopper is not a tactical mastermind or he doesn't play Counter-Strike as he was a tactical mastermind. Odds are that if he tried to do that, then Donk wouldn't be as impactful as he is, and that would make him a bad in-game leader. You got to play to the strength you have, and right now that strength is Donk.
By the way, this actually ties into a topic I did want to talk about. I could segue into perfectly, which is when people are doing now the constant debate of like Donk versus Zewu, which by the way is a great debate. It is like a Messi Ronaldo thing where you can go back and forth. There's all cool points for both sets of people, even though, yes, a lot of the people having this discussion aren't attempting to do the cool discussion. They're just doing the like, my guy's better than you, you are an idiot, blah, 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 or your player sucks, or whatever, which is the classic angle, right? There's an aspect to this which I do think is worth discussing because it's actually quite an analytical point, which is this reminds me of a point I actually made at the aforementioned Katowice, the first big S tier event that Donk broke out at. One of the points I made after that episode was, because that was the first big LAN, so no one actually even knew he would do that again. That might have been the high watermark. You know, there may be classic angles, you know, maybe people figure him out, or maybe he just has, you know, I even used the Roadrunner example. Maybe eventually he has the moment like he did at the major where it's like, fuck, actually, pressure is real. Like, I wasn't failing before, so I never noticed it, but he eventually catches up to you. But a point I made at the time was, I didn't want people to only look at Donk because he was breaking the records and be like, oh, it's just the Donk guy. Which, by the way, look, in light of what I just said earlier, he is the greatest carry ever. Like, so he does do most of the effort. But I agree with you. I even said back then, but it's not like he's really just in like a random team of five players and they're just like, you just go over that side of the map, I guess, Donk. Like, you could see he had, like, the whole team structure was based around him. They had special util and setups to get him into sites. Even the way that, like, they would condition the opponent that sometimes Donk would go first, then the next time it would be Chopper. Sometimes, like, that, even that stuff was all, like, clearly, like, team thought out. So it's clearly, like, an approach to it. I feel like people have taken that point, Fib, which is clearly correct. It's just you have to debate how much. And they've taken that argument, as usual, and they've gone to the extreme. So now, you've probably seen it. When people are, like, a Zewu fan and they want to downplay play Donk. Well, the problem is they shit out a lock if he wins the event, right? If he has the best numbers, because these are all the metrics they use to argue. So the angle a lot of them take now, I've noticed, is they do this thing where they go, yeah, well, what do you expect? He just gets everything set up for himself. Like, they just throw all the util for him. They just all sacrifice for himself. And what I don't care about this pimp is, I know how these motherfuckers think. They're not saying that like a positive, like I was. Like, you know, props to Spirit, like you, like you, like you'd be an idiot not to do that if you were Chopper, mate. If I had a player like that, I would fucking put everything. Like, if this was basketball, guess what? The ball would be in his hand all the time. I'd be telling him go to the basket, you know what I mean? Like, but they're taking it like a negative. They're almost making it sound, pimp, like if Shiro had a team like that, he'd do that, or anyone, by the way. So I want to get your take on what do you how do you analyze that part? How much do you think Spirit does play for him? How much of a role is that in what he's doing, do you think?
I think people have to understand that there's different ways of supporting a player. One thing is setting him up with certain plays, flashes, etc. Taking your Saibu example, you know, I remember Apex a couple of times back in the past saying that he does everything in order to make Saibu feel comfortable. Like, he jumps for him, he baits for him, he flashes for him, he nades for him, he drops in weapons, everything he can do in order to make Saibu feel comfortable and set him up for success, Apex will do. That's one way of enabling your star player, and then obviously Saibu delivers most of the time, so it's worth it. I don't think that's the same case in Spirit. I mean, flash assist-wise, they're probably the worst team in top 8. Utility-wise, they don't really set up Donk a lot. I think the way they support him is by unleashing him. It's by basically saying that you can do whatever the fuck you want and we will accommodate around you. We will, you know, be in a shitty position if you die, or we will play the opening of the round very defensively even though we wanted to do different things, so you have time to work on your area or do whatever you need to do in the terms of, you know, sometimes he is stuck behind a smoke and even Donk can walk through a smoke and get an entry before that smoke disappeared or whatever. So I think the way they support him is more so allowing him to do whatever he wants to do. Sometimes he gets a bit of help, you know, from a teammate. Sometimes he get a little bit of utility. But if you watch his games and you watch his demos and watch how he plays, Anubis was the greatest example out of all the maps. It's basically just Donk feeling, walking in, getting a multi-kill, getting an opening, and then walking away again. Like, that happens so many times where there's no one around him to set him up. There's no, like, strategical plan. There's just Donk maybe, you know, and that could be Halley as well. The way you support him as a coach is by, listen, I see a weakness on Anubis in Cave or in Connector or whatever. I think you can get in and get a lot of entry kills, you know. Be aware of this timing. Be aware when he smokes like this. he does this, yada, yada, yada. And then it's up to Donk himself to get it done. So I think that's the way they support him the most. It's not, again, it's not tactical in the sense that he's being set up with sick smoke combinations or nades being broken for him all the time or whatnot. Like, obviously, occasionally that happens. But if you watch the majority of his games and if you watch how he works, some of the games, it also changes, you know, the beginning of the round, the first four, the first couple of buy rounds, it's obviously set plays, set strats, whatever, set defaults. And then you can clearly see that changes sometimes when you get to round 7, 8, 9. Then it's Donk having a feeling, I want to go over here and get a couple of kills. Or I want to go over towards the B bomb side on Mirage and get an opening right now. He does whatever he wants. And I think that's the biggest sacrifice the team is making. They allow him to do whatever he wants, whenever he does it. And you know, that's why he's the strongest player and the hardest carry in the world right now. He doesn't require a babysitter. I do think to some degree that Saiwu requires a babysitter in order to be as successful as he has been. I do think that there's the whole conversation regarding to Vitality and when Apex are playing with him. I think Saiwu would be a worse off player if he weren't playing with Apex. I don't think Donk would be worse off if he didn't play with Chawa at all. I don't think there's that correlation. I think Donk could do what he does on pretty much any team in the world that allowed him to do whatever he wants to do. And that is the biggest sacrifice Spirit is making. And I think that's what people don't realize that, yeah, you know, there's different ways of setting a player free. And sometimes you just got a guy like Donk, he just has to do whatever he wants to do. And a guy like Saiwu, he needs a bit of help or needs a bit of setup or needs a bit of confidence from the in-game leader to, you know, we spoke about, you know, Saiwu, take more charge of the game, you know, be a little bit more egotistical, maybe be a little bit more of a badass on the server. And I think he needs a little push sometimes to do that. Whereas Donk doesn't need that. He just does it by himself.
No, by the way, what I would maybe frame it as on the Chopper angle is, look, I'm someone myself who's wondered maybe they should have a different IGL on this team. Maybe they should gamble on a Boomich or something like that. Yeah. Who knows, right? But one thing I'll say is this, is from seeing how Donk plays, I do think there's a world where the reason why Chopper might be a good IGL for him specifically is what you just said, is that actually Chopper seems himself. It's funny. This is one of the things our old friend fucking Happy back in the day from LDLC and Envy is. I famously had, like, I used to do these epic fucking arguments with him in bars, because for whatever reason, the French players always want to argue about things I was wrong about in CS at the after party, which is like, whatever. But here's the thing. Normally, if you like some fucking guy like Dennis from Mousesports, I'll just tell you, like, could you fuck off? I'm trying to actually enjoy my drink here. But if you're actually like a major winner, sometimes I'll give you like 10 minutes. Okay, get it off your chest. What's the problem? And one of the things he famously told me back in the day was because at the time he had Shox, but he didn't actually run everything through Shox like I thought he should. I mean, I thought Shox was the best. He was like, you don't understand, Thurin. There is the star player ego. He wants to do everything. And I said, yeah, you know what, Happy? There's an in-game leader ego too, though, mate. Sometimes the in-game leader wants to be seen to be able to control the star player. He wants everyone to know that that tactic was his call. It wasn't that the guy ran in and shot three heads. That's right. There's a lot of IGLs, mate, I can tell you. In fact, I'll tell you an obvious way to tie this into the topic of showing how insane Donk is as a rookie. Is, mate, when fans ask me, so is he the greatest rookie ever? I tell them, like, pretty obviously. In fact, the only contender is Ziwu, because everyone else who you think of as, like, the GOAT contender, they took either years to power up level-wise. Like, people like Device didn't come in as the best. Or if you even want the supercars like Nico and Simple, they were just in not very good teams. They were in like Flipside and Mousesports, mate. And in fact, even in those teams, no one ever would have done this and built the whole game around them. Like, I can tell you, when Nico came in, spoiler, he's one of the reasons why God B got kicked out of their team, because that wasn't a fucking combo that worked. God B's a super controlling IGL from 1.6, mate, who's running German tactical CS. Blade in Flipside, the joke is the reason he was always perfect to be a coach is he is like some fucking Pep Guardiola guy who like wants the game to be played in a specific way. You notice, by the way, a bit like Pep Guardiola, he doesn't really want the superstar Messi type guy anymore. He wants the people who do what he says in the thing, because he has his own coach ego too. Like, it's like the reason he doesn't want Simple back, even if, by the way, it might even be better for them as a team, who knows. So first of all, no one else, by the way, would ever get set up like that. But more importantly, this is why I asked you the question about the setup, they would never be able to do this even if they were. Listen, Nico and Simple was sick at the beginning of the game, but yeah, they had all sorts of like personality flare-ups and weird, you know, they had to figure out how to not be a selfish player and stuff. That's the other thing. Doc's like seamless integration into their team's unbelievable, mate. I think it's mental. And if you're a Ziwu fan, I'll just throw this out there because maybe your memory's not as good as mine. If you go back to the first year of Ziwu's career in 2019, where his IGL wasn't Apex, it was Alex, the UK player, he famously got in trouble, if you remember, for doing an interview a bit like that. He said in an interview, sort of like, people like go on and on about Ziwu, but we're throwing all the flashbangs for him. brought the same argument. Alex himself was making that argument. Except here's the difference. He wasn't doing it to downplay Zero. He was sort of saying, like, no, we're not really just four bots sat there going, oh, wow, you're killing everyone. We can't. We're doing things to help you as well. Like, we're setting you up. And in that scenario, I imagine a bit like Donk. I imagine also the decision-making is the area I expect these rookies to not be as strong in. So that's also where if people setting you up, people backing you up, people throwing the right unit, that's going to help too. That's going to polish off some of those rough edges, you know?
Yeah, 100%. You know, and I think that could be Halley as well, you know, as a coach.
Sure, absolutely. For
certain scenarios, or making sure that some of those decision flaws that he may or may not have had, you know, are being masked, you know, to the best degree heading into certain games. We don't know. It's always hard to quantify a coach and quantify, you know, how much an in-game leader is doing to a player. But I think if you pay close attention to how Dong is playing, and the biggest sign of that is what I described before as well, that I always feel like the vast majority of the time, first couple of bye rounds, there's a clear idea of what they want to do. Most teams have, you know, the first couple of plays set already heading into the game. The coach prepared that, the in-game leader prepared that. But when you get into, you know, by round number 3, 4, and 5.5, that's when the players are starting to make their own decisions or calling out a T-spawn that I want to go for this pick because I felt this in XYZ round. And Donk does that almost all the time where he takes charge of the games, you know, in the middle of them. Obviously, sometimes he starts off, you know, in the pistol round and wins the first by round as well. But it's almost like he's being unleashed, you know, in by round number 3, 4, and 5 where he gets to call his own place. And I think to be completely honest, if you took that away, as you said, like if you took that away from Donk or if you put, I don't know, Bladen to be the coach of Spirit, you know, as a thought experiment, it would be too controlling. It would take away from Donk's, I guess, initiative, but also the way he thinks Counter-Strike. Like, he's one of the most intuitive, smart players you've ever seen, and then he has the aim to back it up as well. And at that point, you just, as I said, like, I think the biggest thing you can do if you're Chopper or if you're Halley or if you're any of Donk's teammate is just make sure he feels as good as possible. You know, fuck up as least as you can. You know, try not to be in his way, you know, whenever he does the play, if that's what he needs. And it sounds simplistic in an era where all he's talking about is preparing more, you know, more team play, better preparation, coach analysis, et cetera, et cetera. Same in football, you know. Back in what, 20, 25, 27, 2010, when Messi was in his peak in Barcelona, that was also the era when all the analytics came into football, where all the stats came into football. But some players and some people, they just surpassed that, you know.
Yes.
Obviously, it makes the average guy better, or it makes the talented players better. It makes the coaches better. But there will always be players who just go above and beyond that shit, you know, who doesn't give a fuck. And I think Donk is that guy.
No, by the way, the best sports analogy I've ever found for it comes from basketball. Basically, what happened was the coach that Michael Jordan won all of his championships with, he actually initially didn't want to be his coach, mate. That was the assistant coach. Then when they fired the other coach, they promoted this guy. And when he said to Michael Jordan, I'm going to run this offense called the triangle offense, which, by the way, if people know a lot about basketball, essentially, unlike actually most traditional ways of playing basketball, the whole point of the triangle offense is it's actually supposed to work for any type of team, as in it's supposed to be what you call an equal opportunity offense, as in you're supposed to just move the ball around, and the idea is whoever has it in a favorable position can in theory take the shot. Well, you have to realize if you're Michael Jordan, who at the time was already the best player in the NBA, you're like, you're going to bring in an offense that essentially like other people in the team take my shots. Basically, he was against it, bro, but here's what the coach explained to him that is genius, exactly what you're saying. He was like, no, that system is for the other players. Like, the point is the way you're going to get them into the game is playing this system. But then, for example, when it's like the fourth quarter and the game's on, like, you're just going to break the system and do what you were going to do anyway. And that's the genius thing he got Michael Jordan to buy in on, is sort of like, essentially, it's not for you. I'm not putting you in a cage. I'm making like a system so they like a streamline. They know what they're doing at all times. But then, like you're saying with Donk, like if it's like round 7 and he's like from conditioning the last 2 times, he knows he can just fuck these 2 people up in a duel at the doors. He's just going to go do it, mate. It doesn't matter what the call is. And the difference is in this team, he clearly has what you call in basketball the green light. He's just allowed to do it. You can tell they don't do that thing of sort of like, which by the way, I think it's a valuable point to make. I think some really great IGLs would sometimes be like, whoa, hey, I'm gonna rein you in a bit here, or hey, time out, like, you know, I think we should slow the game. Like, in this scenario, they really do commit to what this fucking player wants to do, mate. Right, I've got an angle I have to ask about now, which is, I heard you after that major, mate. I heard how lyrical, put it this way, the joke is, at that major, in a good way, you were also the stand-in for Maniac, because on this show, and in general, Maniac was actually known for being the number one Zebu fan, right? He was the one who always thought Zebu was the best player, and he's going to be better than Simple, or he is better than Simple. It's all that, right? After that major, you were fucking, you were given Zebu the highest, I think you even said he was the GOAT, didn't you? Didn't you actually have him, or you said he was going to be the GOAT and never play or something, right? So here's the obvious question. It's a hard one, but that's the fun of these shows. How do you evaluate Zemo versus Donk now? Because in theory, if Zemo's going to be the GOAT, or he is the GOAT pimp, he wins almost every tournament that Vitality's like in. He's the MVP of pretty much all these tournaments. Doesn't matter, even if he has the odd bad game, his numbers are unbelievable. He has every single tick you could want. So how do you evaluate this at the moment? Donk versus Zemo now, today. What do you do? How do you figure it out?
I mean, there's no doubt to me that Saibu, according to me, is still the GOAT. You know, that doesn't change now. I think Donk will be in the future if he continues. I think that's always been my main argument. You know, whenever we had this whole, you know, Saibu versus Simple, I've always stated, I think I did that 2 years ago, that obviously Simple was the GOAT 2 years ago or 3 years ago or whatever. Right. It's just a question of time. It's not Saibu's fault that his parents didn't, you know, enable him to play Counter-Strike earlier or didn't, you know, give him birth earlier. It's just a question of time. And I think time proved that to be the case. Saibu, you know, has been phenomenal, has never been outside of the top three of the individual players ever. He is actually, you know, going to be number one this year as well. I don't agree with that. I think Donk is the best player in the world right now and probably has been for the entire year. But obviously when you're Saibu and you win all the stuff and you get all the MVPs, it's harder to make that case. I think the same argument I want to use for Donk, I think it's just a question of time. You know, Donk has only been a pro player for, what, a year and a half? You know, let's have this conversation in 3 years, and I'm willing to bet my money right now that Donk would be the GOAT. You know, I think if he continues what he's doing right now, then he's going to be in that conversation. The only thing that makes me resistant to have that right now is that there just hasn't been enough time. I think you need at least 2, and I probably also want to say 3 years, you know, on the top before you contest the likes of Saibu and Simple. I think they've done it for so long and such a high level that regardless of Donk maybe having an average rating of 150 2 years in a row, I don't think even that would be enough to consider him the GOAT. I think we need at least a bit of longevity. I know that's to many maybe the weakest argument in all these conversations, but I think it's not an argument, it's more so an enabler. You know, you don't enter the conversation before you had a little longevity, and then maybe you can use a long longevity as a counter argument to why you should place higher, why you should use that as an argument. But I think it's a qualifying factor to be in the conversation, and I don't think Donk has it yet.
What about then at the actual... I'll tell you what, I'll do a little response to that, then I'll ask that question. Okay, like basically, yeah. I'm in a similar position, just the difference is I have Simple as my GOAT still. But I actually think this is why, if you're a Zemo fan, and as I said, listen, Pimp said all the things you wanted to hear him say after the major, he thinks Zemo is the GOAT. Like, don't hate on Pimp for that. He actually does believe... But the problem, I think, if you're Zemo is this. This is where, if you're a Zemo fan, you all fucking jumped the gun and said some really stupid things 3 years ago, because they all did the same argument you did, Pimp. But what they forgot is this. In the same way as when Simple was number one, no one could ever imagine another player was going to come along. I mean, they came along the next year and contend him at the time. He looked like levels better. Remember, that year was the year where it was like Simple, Device, Nico, and then I think, like, I don't know, like fucking Magisk or something. Like, mate, at that time, when you look at those players, you're like, bro, Simple could just be like clear number one for like 10 years straight. This is nuts. But then Zemo came along, again, out of the blue. You can never predict these players. And he looked like, I mean, he did win it, number one player a couple of years. He's won it 3 times now. Some people do think he's better. The problem if you're a Zemo fan is someone who before was a fan of Simple isn't agreeing with you now anyway, so you've got a dispute there, but you just think Zemo's better. The problem you're really going to have is this. I actually think what you've just said is going to become, within the next year, that will be the new narrative, which is that what you're going to hate if you're a Zemo fan is Zemo either only got a short era of a few years or he didn't get any. People will go from Simple was the GOAT to Donk is the GOAT. And even if they went to Zemo in between, they're going to go to Donk. Because I agree with you. I have to say what makes this conversation so difficult is I used to say before that like Nico, Simple and Zemo were like aliens because they don't even seem like normal human players. Like, they don't seem like their idea of a bad game even statistically doesn't make sense. It's like their bad game is an average game for another superstar player. Like I've always said, the difference between even like Nico and Simple is like a bad game for Simple is an all right game for Nico. Like we just don't expect as much from Nico. So one of the problems I have with this topic goes like this. I think Donk, in his own way, it's because of the role he plays, mate. That's what breaks my brain. Like, people might know, last year, I wanted Monacy to be the number one player because I look at, like, how he played in the arena games. He also plays a game, I understand, he plays a simple-type game, an aggressive AWP style where he goes, he can win the clutches too. He had the whole game, but part of what would break my mind is I always told people, that's when I'm reasoning who I think number one is. Every time I would then watch Donk play, my brain was just telling me the whole time, like, this has to be the best player I've ever seen ever play, maybe any esports game ever. Like, what he's doing, it's not even that it's perfect, it's just inconceivable. Like, how does he do this angle? How does he get that shot again? What, now he's going to get 2 kills instead of 1? Like, he would just do these things round after round after round after round. So the problem I think we have on this topic is I don't really know how people can, like, essentially, it's why I brought that thing about the setup. It's like, I don't really know what the knock against Donk is. Do you know what I mean? Like, the knock against Simple was he had a bad attitude. You have to have the right teammates around him. The knock against Ziwu, you said before, I agree with you, by the way. I think Ziwu without Apex, if Ziwu actually had the worst IGL, I think that Ziwu could have would be someone who just says, like, yes, Ziwu, whatever you say, mate. I think that would ruin his game. I think he'd be like 20% worse or something. I think you're right. I think, I mean, it's literally something people have seen. Apex will literally turn to him and say, we're going to go out the tournament if you don't do something now, basically, which, by the way, is dope. And I can tell you, Ziwu is actually like a movie. He responded a bunch of times to that and fucking smurfed the tournament, being the MVP. The problem is, I don't know what the knock against Donk is. Like, I know it sounds fucked because normally you should always be able to have a totally open conversation about who the best is. But I would genuinely say to someone who thinks Donk isn't the best player, tell me what he's doing wrong. Like, what more do you want him to do? Because I actually feel like, here's the problem, Pimp. It's the best way to explain it is this, right? Now that there is a Ziwu and a Monacy, actually, that does make what Simple did less special. Because even though it's insane, Monacy's actually, first of all, looks quite similar, and Ziwu can get all the same stats. So actually, you know what? There are players. I don't think anyone can do what Donk does. That's why the joke is maybe Keisuke is the only guy, because I can tell you right now, people like Nico, Nerds, fucking, what's his name, Exertion, Yekinda, these guys want to do what Donk is doing, Pimp. I can tell you, when I asked Exertion, he told me even he watches his demos and is like, how do you fucking do that? Like, no one can do what this guy does from that role, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's true. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. He's in all his essence, he's very unique. You know, I think he is, again, you know, my football, my sports analogy will always go towards, you know, football. And I think he is the Messi of Counter-Strike in a sense that it's just a natural gift, you know. I don't think he's necessarily the hardest worker. I don't think he's necessarily the guy who's, you know, methodical about how he plays, how he warms up. You know, he's not obsessed like Ronaldo is in his way of preparing for games or training or working hard. I think Donk is just a natural gifted player at a level that we haven't seen before. He is indeed an alien, you know. And I also think, if you want to get into that argument, you know, one of the reasons why I have Saibu as the GOAT, you know, and let me be honest, right? I think there's a case to be made for Simple. Obviously, it's a discussion.
Oh, but all these players can be in it, of course, yes.
Of course, yeah, but I wasn't even sure, you know, myself, you know, before I had a long thought about, you know, that I would say Saibu above Simple.
Okay.
But one of the things that I also look towards is, who did you beat, you know? It's like, who were your opposition back then? And my argument would be that it doesn't really take away from Simple's numbers. Obviously, they would have been the same, but there's something to be said about coming in, being Saibu, and beating Simple, you know, while Simple was still
fair.
In his prime.
Yeah.
I think that's like one of the strongest arguments, where Simple, you know, his competition was Device. His competition was Nico with a rifle. His competition was players that was never going to be on his level. Because as you said, and I think that's so spot on, that a good game for Simple is an excellent game for Nico. You know, or an average game for Simple is a great game for Nico. And there was just a difference, even though they're both aliens. So for Saibu to come in and beat Simple in his prime, that's stellar. And the issue I have now is that Donk is doing the same thing, and he's beating arguably not only Saibu, but he's beating Monacy as well. And he's beating everyone, you know, to a point where it's when you watch the game and you watch the impact, and I know, I don't know if you saw the segment I had with Janko as well, where like he laughed at me, where I said like, it feels like Donk has way more impact than his rating suggests, and his rating was 1.5. It that's what it feels like when you're watching it. It's ridiculous. You know, I know Mirage, the map against Mouse in the final, Chopper had 16 kills, Donk had 18 kills. My point is, the difference in impact was like this big, even though there was only two kills in between them. And people need to understand that Donk single-handedly won Spirit that game, where Chopper had an eco ace, you know, against a weak force buy or something.
Yes.
There was only two kills between them, but there was an insignificant amount of impact between them. And I think that's the case right now as well, where even if Saibu was having the same numbers as Donk, even if, I don't know, Monacy gets back to a level where he's having the same numbers as Donk, you know, I would still argue the way Donk's play Counter-Strike, the way he dictates the game, is at a level I have not seen before. I think Monacy is the one getting closer to it, with the way that, as you described as well, aggressive opping, you know, taking a lot of freedom, a lot of liberty to go for opening duels. Whereas when Saibu is carrying a game, it does feel like it's more methodical. It does feel like it's more rhythm, you know, where he gets in a flow state and he's slowly but surely suffocating his opponents by getting kills here and there all the time. Whereas Donk, he's just a hammer that hits you. You know, it can be a 9-9 game and then boom, game is over because Donk just had two good rounds in a row. You know, I don't feel the same impact coming out from any other player in the world. And I don't think I've ever seen anyone else than Prime Simple do that.
No, that's actually one area I've always thought one of the biggest flaws we all have in Counter-Strike is we act like every single kill is of equal value, and so all we do is look at the number of kills. Yeah. Like, I'll give someone an analogy. Since football's your sport, by the way, I'll try and tailor most of my examples to that, right? If people don't know, because of Pep Guardiola and the way they do the build-up play in modern football, the actual players that have all the passing records now are the defenders. It's like Van Dijk for Liverpool, mate, because all he does is take a million passes from the goalkeeper and the other defender and pass it to the other defender. Like, by the way, the point I'm making here is he does the easiest passes in the game, but it means his stats are bonkers for passes. But if I tell you to think of like a classic old school, like Zinedine Zidane, like collect the ball, like in fucking midair at midfield, go around two people, that's a different pass, mate. You know what? It might just record on the paper as he did one successful pass. What that the difference is that one creates a goal, you know, fucking tears open the defense, creates all passing out. The other one just starts the playoff. I would say it's the same scenario. If we went and we did like a POV side by side of the chopper POV and the donk one, I imagine some of the kills Doc's getting are just like insane game winning kills, like crack up the whole. The chopper's getting ones where, you know, he shoots a guy in the side of the head, or, you know, he fucking kills the equine guy. Like, I get what you mean. That is totally fair. Here's the problem though. I actually thought when you were saying that though of a way to reframe the Zero angle, which is if I was to talk to Zero on this topic, I would even say, oh, if you actually want to be considered the best player, I think actually you shit out of luck, mate, because basically this guy's come along. And the joke is, I'd say this if Prime Simple was playing. I still think Donk might be the best player, mate, because what he's doing from the roles he's doing, it doesn't make sense. Like, he's sort of broken Counter-Strike. And as I say, it isn't that he's like, he hasn't noticed. I noticed I said he broke it. I didn't see he exposed something broken. Because if it was in the game, mate, I can tell you, I promise you, Exertion and Nerds, all these guys will be doing it tomorrow. They all tell me, like everyone else, yeah, I think I was good at it. They watch him and they're just like, nah, he's too good, mate. I don't even know how he does that. Like, I've tried those moves, it doesn't work. So the problem you have is this. If you ask the fan, I've often heard the question, I've heard Zebu fans ask me, like, what more could Zebu do? I actually don't think there's an answer right now, mate. Essentially, you can't be who he is. I agree so much, it's also natural, mate. It's clearly not that he like figured some cool angle out in a server. There's something genius coming from this guy. But I would say this, what you should think of if you're Zero is this. It's what I used to tell Device back in the day. I used to go, mate, at the end of the day, who actually gives a fuck if they say Simple's the best player? You win every tournament in Astralis, mate. If I were you, I'd just like content yourself to just win. First of all, you tend to get the MVP if you win the tournament. I'd get all the MVPs, all the majors and all the trophies. And by the way, he did. At the end of CSGO, the coolest thing if your device is you can go, oh, was I never number one player? I think I'll just go to my trophy room that's like a fucking wing of my house that's got everything in it pretty much. Yeah. Like, if you're Zewu, don't worry, you can do that now. You're on your equivalent of Astralis. You're the best player on that team. And in fact, I'd even say, look, skill-wise, I think he's much better than Device. But I even think their games are quite similar, because you know what? Device also isn't the guy like, hey, give me the ball. Like, I'm an eager. He's the guy who's like, I'll play within the system. I'll play within what's happening in the game. If it's a quieter game, I don't mind having 15 kills if we win the game. If Zero does that, by the way, forget being number, he can win a lot of fucking tournaments in his career. He could win like the most trophies ever.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I know you probably hate to hear it, you know, but it is and will always be a conversation that we like more than the players. You know, they don't give a fuck. No, you're right. You know, if you're winning everything, it is what it is. It's fun for us to have the conversation. It's fun to engage in it. It's fun for the fans as well to debate. You know, it's the whole Messi Ronaldo over and over again. Yes. You know, and it is entertaining. It is fun. But I'll even tell you this, and you may hate to hear that as well. Like, this whole another example that is relevant right now is the whole Vitality. Do they have an era or not? You know, I hate this whole like we have to set up. You know. I guess not qualities, but we have to set up, you know, certain remarks or certain things you need to check off in a box before we can consider it an error. At the end of the day, I don't really care. You know, I would love to have that conversation when their period is over, when we're in it. I just want to enjoy it. I just want to embrace what it is, you know, see where it takes us. And then afterwards, we can have the conversation, was that an error or not, you know, but having that in the middle of it happening, it kind of almost devalues what they're doing right now. And we had it a lot during the major, and it's not that I don't agree us having the segment, because it is something that is interesting, but I even was even like doing the segment kind of fighting it in a sense where I'm like, I don't really care. I don't really care if Vitality has an error or not after they won this game, or after they win the grand final. You know, they're winning the grand final of the major and they're unbeatable. I don't care whether or not they lost that best of one. That's another thing. You know, it's like, for people that ruin the whole narrative of them being unbeatable, I very much agree, and I very much will say that the only thing that counts is the best of three games or that win streak or tournament win streak, you know. And I don't give a fuck whether you lose a best of one in the middle of a tournament where you go on winning a major. And it's like we take these we take these conversations regarding errors and who's the best player of all time, who's the GOAT, who's the best player in the world, and we put them to the extreme, because it is extreme to be having an error, or it is extreme to be the greatest player of all time. But that also devalues what's happening in the moment, because every single little thing we can use to devalue or counter-argue someone having an error or someone being the best player in the world, we are going to use it in the moment it's happening. And I hate that, you know. So I would much rather have that conversation in maybe 6 months from now when Vitality, you know, have stopped winning everything, which could be the case after Cologne, who knows. But for now, there's still, you know, the greatest team maybe to ever play Counter-Strike. I think the only way we get the answer to that question is by waiting and see. And then when they're no longer in contention to be the best team in the world, then we can sit down and we can evaluate it and we can do it properly instead of having to grasp for straws all the time.
By the way, I do agree. Like, one thing I do think is actually impossible, you can try, you'll just never succeed, is trying to evaluate history at the time it's happening. Because I can tell you, an example would be when Team Liquid looked like they were going to have their era and win the major, right? Not only did they not win the major, mate, they didn't even win any tournaments after that. Like, that's what you can't conceive. Because at the time when you're winning everything, your brain thinks things like, well, even if you don't win now, you're still going to win the odd tournament, or you're going to win every other. The crazy thing about CS is winning is so binary. You either do it or you don't, that when you stop winning, you sometimes never win. I mean, look at Strasmith. They go years without winning a trophy. It's crazy to think of, but I agree. You'll never really know how great that team was until essentially it's over, until it's not the best team and they have to make a roster move or tear the roster in half. Right, I have a question that goes like this, though. On the Spirit angle, the reason why I brought that up as the first topic is because in theory, if you win IEM Cologne and you were already an elite team, that should be the discussion. It's like, is this the new top team? Are they going to take over from Vitality? But I feel like, again, this is why I know this way angle is kind of like almost an invisible topic that doesn't matter, is I don't think anyone thinks Spirit's number one. In fact, I don't think anyone even thinks they win the next event. So where do you put Spirit in light of this win? Does this change anything where you are on Spirit at the moment? Where would they rank? Because I have to say, mates, look, I can't say about Falcons because we don't know with this roster, but I would still have both Vitality and Mouse is better than me. In fact, even if they play Mouse again, Mouse might win next time, mate. Like, those are really close games. In fact, that might even be, by the way, Sleeper the best matchup in Counter-Strike. Mouse versus Spirit, like, seems to deliver every time. Where is Spirit in the world for you now?
Yeah, I think it changed for me that before they were like a number four, number five, whatever, but they were not winning anything. You know, they weren't a team that I thought would win the trophy coming into a tournament. I even had them at the major, actually, you know, as a little bit of a dark horse. I think I called out that I think they're going to win the major as well. I think that's the thing you get with Dong. You can win any given tournament. It's almost like back in the day when Monesy and Nico was in G2, where it felt like whenever they won a tournament, the three tournaments leading up to that tournament would always start a discussion. Should Hooksy be kicked now?
Or should
JKS be kicked now? And then they would win the tournament. Then they win Cologne out of nowhere. Then they won Katowice out of nowhere. They never had a good streak leading up to it. And The same could be said for Spirit. Yeah. You know, it's like whenever they peak, you know, it's not like there's signs that, oh, they're getting better this tournament, slightly better the next, and then they peak and then they win. It's like it comes out of nowhere, which is kind of... This is kind of what you get with Dunk and Shiro, for that matter, in the conversation. So I have them as a team that can win every tournament they participate. Obviously now, way too soon to tell whether or not that's going to be consistently happening. I think if you put them up against Vitality in the grand final at Cologne, I think Vitality would win. I think they had a regular day off against Mouse, to be completely honest. That was the worst we've seen them play ever with that lineup, even worse than when they lost to Aurora, which people forget happened in January as well at Blast Bounty. That was actually quite a decent game, and also the first time they played with Robs on land, so excuses were in place. I think the performance they had against Mouse were significantly worse, and one thing I absolutely adored about that, just a side note as well, was Apex coming to the desk. We requested him, even we made the decision before the game that even if they win or lose, we want a Vitality player. Like, the biggest story is Vitality obviously winning, you do a winner's interview on the desk, that's the normal thing. Even if they lose, that's almost a bigger story to hear from, you know, from Apex. Sure. Than, okay, now this streak is over, you know. So we made kind of that call or discussed that call happening. And I think Apex said during that segment, and he got a lot of shit for it on Reddit and HLTV, that he felt Mouse didn't play well, and if Mouse doesn't step up tomorrow versus Spirit, he think they'll lose, you know, because he didn't think they play well at all against Vitality. I think that's just it's just a ballsy thing to say, because people obviously don't like to hear that. It's not a humbling thing to say when you just lost to Mouse, but it also reassured me that what I saw in that game was probably correct, that Vitality played the worst brand of Counter-Strike they probably have ever played together. Mouse didn't play that well, and yet they still won quite comfortably against Vitality. And I think that was part of that story. And I think the same could be said for Spirit in that grand final. I don't think Mouse played well versus Spirit at any point in that grand final. And I'm afraid that had Spirit played Vitality, Vitality would probably have won against Spirit. So that's where I have them right now. You know, whether that is second the next couple of tournaments will confirm or deny that. But I agree with you right now. If I had a gun to my head, I'd say there's a higher likelihood that we get to see another Vitality Mouse Grand Final than Vitality Spirit or Spirit Mouse for that matter.
And I'll even throw this out there. One of the weirdest things about this event is because they didn't have to play a Vitality or Falcons, and in the end played like... Mouse was a good team, but obviously people like Na'Vi are in like weird conditions, you know. Even some of the teams they played earlier weren't like that crazy. Like they got to play Aurora in like the second round of the group stage, but that's without Zantaris. So that, you know, that team won those ones where like, you could have had a much stronger team there. That'd be tougher, you know. The problem I also think is, it sounds mad because you did win the IM Cologne. It's not like you did anything wrong, but I think this maybe in English, the saying we always have is it's called you flatter to deceive. It's like you maybe looked a bit better than you actually were. Because another thing about this tournament, Pimp, is if anyone knows the last, like the last season of Spirit, their map pool, their go-to map is Dust 2. They only played it once here, mate, because like Mouse is a team that bans that, for example. Like they didn't even have to play Dust. Oh no, maybe they don't actually. I'm thinking of another one. There's someone bans it that they played against anyway. But basically, they never had to play that. The map that was like ridiculous, mate, was like they were winning every inch that they got fucking put on. And they even that one time, this is why actually I also wish the final had gone all five maps. They, when they played in that group stage decider one, the one where it doesn't matter if you win or lose, you're in the playoffs, where they played Mouse the first time. The decider, which Mouse chose, by the way, it was the choice between Nuke and Overpass, and Mouse opted into the Overpass. And they even won the Overpass the one time they played it. So, like, you can't know where their map pool's at right now, mate. Like, I don't know that this is their map pool. I just feel like they beat the teams that were in front of them. Also, they feel like they nicked loads of maps. So, the amount of times I saw them nick an Ancient or a Mirage was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's true. It is hard to. That's the thing, though. Would come first and foremost coming out of a break as well. A lot can change in a player break. I think that's one of the most underrated aspects of Counter Strike when you come out of a break. Like, there's been so many historical teams where I remember maybe 17 or 16, like the old Heroic with Valde and Snappy and whatnot. I remember them not taking a player break during the summer. They were maybe like a top 15 team or something heading into the player break. Then they power practiced throughout the entire player break as one of the only teams. They came out on the other side and all of a sudden they were top three team in the world. Like they just became like world beaters out of nowhere. Obviously not to the same degree anymore as some of these pro teams. They do need a player break. The season is so, I guess, clouded with events, etc. But it can change 5 to 10%. Like your strength can really change coming out of a player break, which is also why I'm not willing to say for Vitality. You know, I think that was a regular day off. I didn't see anything up until that point at Cologne that they didn't play as well as they have been. You know, the group stage was flawless. Semi-final looked decent. The quarterfinal, decider game in the groups looked fine. Straight to the semi-final, so it just felt like a regular day off for Vitality. And that's what we have to use these first couple of events to kind of hone in on, you know, who came out of the player break the better. Roster change is one thing with Trey coming into to Spirit. Another thing is all the teams not making roster changes. You can lose 5% or you can gain 5% depending on how well you've been practicing, you know, just when you started after the player break or leading into Cologne, leading into the next couple of tournaments. So it's something we have to evaluate as it's happening, which is also... Well, I can't really answer your question. You know, where do I see Spirit right now? I don't see them changed in any sense. I don't think they're stronger or worse off than they were before. They just confirmed to me now that they're good enough to win tournaments when Donk is playing well. Whereas before, even if Donk were playing well, they weren't good enough to win tournaments. So that's the only thing to me that's changed.
No, by the way, I'm also with you. Like, I would not at all over, like, react to this Vitality result. Like, first of all, it was obvious that the most likely place they would lose would be like a best of three. Like, it's not like Mouse beat them in a best of five either. I also agree with you, by the way. If they'd have somehow won that series, I think they would have beaten the Spirit playing identically to this in the grand final. Like, I think a lot of teams, especially Spirit, by the way, are in shit or luck at a best of five against Vitality. Then you've got to look at the way they lost. Like, mate, at this whole tournament, this is one of the worst tournaments Zebu's had in a long time, mate. Like, and that's not a player where, you know, he's occasionally big. He's every other tournament, the guy is like a guaranteed top three player minimum. So I can easily predict he's going to bounce back at the next tournaments and do awesome, and that won't be an issue. And then just as people will know on that last map, bro, even when they lost the train game that stopped it going to a decider against Mouse, like, they still got 5 T rounds on train with Flames getting 1 kill, and then on the CT side he got 0 kills. That means on CT side his spot was just a free fucking entry to the bomb site, and then on T side one of your important T side players had 0 impact almost, like, and he still ended up getting 8 rounds. Like, mate, this is like, for real, if you're Vitality, I know it's Cologne, but you really do just go to sleep, wake up and go, I delete that event from my brain and just go on. Like, you could the next day, if the next day tournament began the day after, they'd win it, mate. Like, They're still going to be number one out. By the way, I would predict they still win most of the tournaments this season. I don't know if they could win them all, because that's impossible that they did it the first time. But yeah, I'm with you, mate. There's no, I don't even know what panic people would have about this. There was nothing in how they lost that made me worried, you know. And same thing with them, surely. They're coming off a player break where they just won everything. I'm sure they had fucking 2 weeks off or went to the Maldives or something, you know.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's interesting in that is that we have the Blast Bounty happening right now where the first two games are online, you know, and that could change stuff. I think the first game for them is against a very weak opponent. That's going to be just fine for Vitality. But the second round, where you have to, the round of 16, which means that if you win that game, you go into the LAN environment in Malta next week. But if you lose that game, you're out. I think there's a world, you know, where they could get a strong opponent in that game online. And, you know, that could play a factor in that. What happens if they lose that game? You know, do we now quantify that or do we disregard that because it was online? You know, that opens up the conversation for Vitality maybe entering a state where I don't think that they're necessarily a worse off team, but I think they believe themselves have, you know, that they're unbeatable or can't lose to anyone anymore. That kind of starts to disappear. And it was the same thing that happened to Cypnix back in the day. You know, this whole, like, the best example I can ever give is that when you're playing Counter-Strike and you yourself believe that you are better, you also just play better. It's as simple as that. It was Cypnix when he was clutching all the time in Astralis. Whenever he was in a clutch, he felt that I'm going to win this clutch. So he could misplay the clutch, or he could do something stupid in the clutch, or the opponents would look at the scoreboard and it's Cypnix alive, and they would do then something, you know, misplayed or give him, you know, more space than he actually should have gotten, et cetera, et cetera. So it has a reinforcing effect. And I think people now are looking at Vitality that if they lose, you know, to Mouse, that's a game off, sure enough. They then lose an online game, maybe a Blast, or all of a sudden they don't look at Vitality the same way, and that could open up, you know, for a different dynamic whenever they're playing them. So it's to me, it's not a worrisome loss at all. I think it was a day off, and if they were to win the Blast Bounty right here, we wouldn't even have the conversation. We'd just delete that event from our minds. Obviously, it's Cologne, so it sucks for them, but interesting part to me is that the follow-up event is not LAN from start to finish. Had it been a LAN event from start to finish, it would have been way easier to say that after a couple of games, both for Vitality, but also for the people playing against them. But for now, it's somewhat, you know, still up in the air in a way. And I think that's why it's kind of cool. You know, I don't like online play, but it's kind of cool in this particular Vitality case to see them. How do they respond to playing online Counter-Strike, you know, given what just happened at Cologne.
To wrap up, we'll just touch on a couple of other teams and then we'll close it for this one. I just want to show we could go like in depth on the big topics, then we'll on other events. I'm sure there'll be more varied. It won't be a whole thing on one team this time, but I thought this was one that warranted it. Because like I say, it's actually a rare example of like a team wins an event and you can actually still just go, there's all these problems and also what you're doing with that. Normally you're supposed to go, it must be awesome. You won the event 10 out of 10. So similarly, even though Mouse just finished second and beat fucking Vitality and ended the streak and all that jazz, it was all great. The problem I have is this, Pimp. I still also wouldn't overreact to Mouse. Like, I'm sorry, I don't look at this and go, Mouse is better than Vitality. They're going to win the next. In fact, them even losing the final, I'm sorry, that was actually what I expected, I'm afraid. Because one of the problems I have with their squad is, look, they have beaten Spirit before. I said they actually match up very well against them. They've now actually beaten everyone, by the way. They beat Falcons themselves before to get to that last final before the major. They've beaten Spirit, obviously. They've now beaten Vitality. They've beaten all the other top teams. But the problem is, this is why I always contrast this team with the old team Liquid and Astralis. Bro, it's not even about the opponent anymore. Maybe a year ago it was like any good team would beat them in the playoffs. Now you have to be a world-class team, but some of it is they do it to themselves. Do you know what I mean? Like in this final, they didn't play the way they did against Vitality. They did that classic thing, which is the most cursed phrase you can ever say if you're a player. You can say it on the desk because we don't have to play the game. Do you know if you ever think that thought to yourself, Pimp? This is the real final. Oh, bro, the amount of times you do that and then you win that match and then guess what? Yeah. You don't win the next final and the team that was supposed to be the underdog beats you. Like, I feel like, look, awesome, great by Spirit and by Donk, but Mouse get the assist for that final, mate. They do, there's something happens to them in finals, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think it's a complicated topic to open for me because I'm not sold on Mouse as much as their results justify. Like, obviously, right. They have been a fantastic team throughout the entire year and, you know, bringing in Spinks, bringing in Broland, I think the expectations were much lower. But I still look at Mouse. I think I said it on the desk as well during Cologne. You know, it's such a wasted opportunity once again. Like they've had half a year now where they've been the second best team in the world. They've been in a lot of grand finals. Unfortunately for them, they happened to be great when Vitality became unbeatable. So that sucks in terms of racking in trophies. I don't think Mouse is gonna be racking in more trophies in the future. I don't think Mouse is going to get over that hurdle. I think there's a gun ahead right now. I think there's a higher likelihood that Falcons win 3 trophies before Mouse does, you know, as it is right now. I don't think that's a ballsy statement even. I think most likely going to happen, which is also a way of quantifying what is Mouse. I think Mouse is a team that has overperformed for a prolonged period. almost to the same degree as Na'Vi did last year. Where Na'Vi, they have trophies to show for it because there was not enough competition to Na'Vi. Vitality obviously had the whole period with Spinks where he didn't want to be on the team and Apex wanted him out, but no one wanted to buy him and blah, 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 blah. That ruined, you know, a lot, but that also bought Na'Vi a couple of trophies. Na'Vi had 6 grand finals in a row. It was a fantastic year for them. They lost a lot of those grand finals. They weren't unbeatable. True. It wasn't a team that you would, you know, fear per se. That could have been Mouse's season the first 6 months had Vitality not existed. They would have been in maybe 5 or 6 grand finals. They would have won 3 of them and we would have quantified them as maybe the best team in the world. I don't think that's the case. Just like Na'Vi now, I think Yanko said it during the HLTV podcast, like maybe it was a fluke. It was just a fluke that lasted for a long time because look at where Na'Vi's at right now.
Sure, it's not true. So, yeah,
guess who was right in the end, you know, as told you. But I think the same for Mouse. If I were to be completely honest, I think it's a great team. I think it's great players. I think they have done the absolute best they could do, and I think they have peaked already. I would not be surprised if, first and foremost, Vitality is a better team. Second of all, Falcons become a better team. I think Spirit, over time, would become a better team as well. Let's not forget that they just won Cologne. They brought in Tui in order to change that to make sure that they are, at the very least, the second best team in the world. I wouldn't be surprised if either FaZe, G2 or some of those teams get their shit together. Maybe not the next couple of months, but at least the next season as well. So long term, I think Mouse is a team that's going to struggle to keep the 5 players together. Because if you are FaZe, you want to bring in Exertion. Like if you are another team, you want to bring in some of that talent to your team. Torsi would be a great asset to a lot of different teams as well. And I think they will realize that they had a good run. They were great together, better than expected, better than the budget suggests, better than the player material suggests, definitely better than the salaries justifies. And at some point, those players want to cash in. You know, I was surprised Jim Fett didn't move when he could. I think he's maybe a little bit more of a comfort player. And let's be honest, ever since he re-signed with Mouse, he's been a shadow of himself, hasn't been the same player he was. I don't think his stock value is as high as it used to be. I think Exertion and Torsi, given the opportunity, won't make the same mistake.
No, by the way, I know what you mean. Everyone's forgotten that narrative, which was the narrative at the end of last year. To be fair, I pushed it a lot, but it wasn't based on any inside info, Pimp. I just assumed that they'd all come to the conclusion you're talking about. I just think it's taken them an extra year longer. I think after this season, they'll all realise what we're talking about, which is, we're not even saying it to hate on you guys. Like, it actually doesn't make sense for you guys to stay together because, yeah, your team is awesome, but one, you're in the era of giants, mate. Like, you aren't in a year where it's like, if this is 2022 or 2023, I agree with you, you'd have picked up a bunch of trophies. You might even be number one, like, on aggregate like Na'Vi was last year. But by the way, I always say the same thing about Na'Vi now. I never use the fact that they're not very good now to diss them. I always say, if anything, I actually agree with you. It actually shows how magical last year was because really none of us can explain it. Blade can't, none of the players can't. No one knows how they all played together that way, how their level rose that way. I always used to say that was one of those runs that really made me question the HLTV rating because the rating for some of the players was bonkers, Pimp. Like, it's why they had to be like given top 10 rankers at the end of the year. But I always said to people, yeah, but if we were doing like Football Manager, we had to do a draft. How many of these players are we really picking early in the draft? You know what? Like, even the best at his role, like Bit, he would get picked like 10th in this draft or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you'd have a lot of star players from other teams before you picked him to your squad. So I agree. That one's just hard to tell. And then the other angle I think's mad is, like, the obvious thing that would have happened last year, but I think it will happen in the future, is it's not even that you all go as like a core somewhere else. You should probably for real all split up and go to other teams. I'm with you. It should probably be like Exertion goes with Carrigan and then, I don't know, fucking Torji's on like Team Liquid or fucking Na'Vi itself or something, you know. All these players, in fact, can go to Falcon. You could all essentially go and be the missing piece that makes another team number one. But I agree. If you look at it, you've just had too long with this core. Like, it can't even be the Shuey angle, can it? Because now it's all with Brawler and the same thing sort of happens. Yeah. And the only player in their team that there's anything left for, in my opinion, is I still think Exertion is probably the biggest of the chalkers. Like, I still think he could give you a bit more in a final, but even then, mate, he's not actually going to be Donk, you know what I mean? Like, he's not really going to be like battling the gods of the game for number one in the world. And that is, by the way, that is a factor in the modern day. There's a reason every other event winning team has like a player of the year candidate. Like, look, we said it, Na'Vi managed it last year inexplicably without one, but I don't know that you can keep doing that, mate. Like, I think that is what Mouse also missed, that guy who just saves the game for you. They have to do it as a team, right?
Yeah, that's the thing as well. And I think like what speaks into that argument as well is that Mouse as an organization just can't attract, you know, the biggest players because they can't afford them, you know. And I think that's as you said, like, it's the same thing when I'm fans have a tough time to understand this, and I try to do that a lot when I'm on the desk as well, you know, to just manage expectations.
Yes.
If you told Mouse from the beginning of the year that you would be the second best team in the world after the first 7 months of the season, you would have won a trophy in Cluj, you would have been in 5 grand finals, arguably lost most of them or all of them to Vitality and now to Spirit as well, they would have screamed and said, yes, let's sign that deal straight away. So can you really allow yourself as a fan to be disappointed when that's happening? I think they're overachieving, you know, compared to budget, player material, expectations. They're delivering on all fronts, and all the players and the whole staff of Vaus deserves an awful lot of credit for where it's easy for us to be cut through. You know, that's not going to last forever. I very much agree with you. That is going to end at a certain point where you can't keep overachieving, because if you do that, then you weren't overachieving in the first place. And I think that's pretty established that's what's happening right now, because the players are not on the salaries compared to Falcons or compared to, hell, even Liquid. I think their player salary, cap is probably higher than freaking Mouse, you know, and Liquid is currently ranked 26th in the world. It's a joke in itself. So they are overachieving to a high degree. And I think there will be a time where all it takes is one player feeling that. All it takes is Exertion feeling, maybe I need to move now. Or Torsi, maybe I've done what I could in Mouse, I need to move now. And as soon as that happens, then the rest of them will also fall apart, as we've seen before, you know, with G2. As soon as Nico and Monacy left, well, that whole team is just going a different direction, having to rebuild, which maybe can't happen in Mouse, but who knows. I think people need to understand how much they're overachieving, and that's not a negative. That's more so a credit to how well they're doing with what they have to work with, basically.
What I'll do, because there isn't...
I just want to point actually on Exertion. You know, him being a joker. I think he's too inconsistent, you know, and I think the best way of showcasing that was against Furia. I think he went, 4-18 in opening kills. That quarterfinal versus Furia, they should have lost. Furia were the better team. Furia just crumbled completely on Inferno in the third map. Furia played better, were the better team. Mao should have lost that game. Exertion went 4-18 in opening kills. Against Vitality, he went 12-12. He won 12 out of 12 opening kills against Vitality. Not bad at all. Against Spirit, I think he went... He made it up on third map, but I think he went 6-23 or something like that. Like he had a horrible game in that department. And that's what he does, you know. When he dominates games and win 10 out of 12 or 12 out of 12 opening kills, he wins you the games because he's almost playing like Donk. Like he's maybe even inspired to be as aggressive as Donk. But when you're losing the vast majority of your opening kills and you're involved in so many, then you become a liability for your team. And I think that's the biggest problem with Exertion. His peak is incredible high, almost world class, I'd say. His ground floor, though, and his base level, whenever he's not having a great game, it does feel like he doesn't have that stop button where he's then going into default mode or going into, okay, I'm playing at 80%, now I'm going to get the most out of my 80%. And instead, it just becomes like 50% or 40% of delivery. And that's an issue for me with Exertion.
What we'll do is, obviously, we're not on this episode going to do the whole breakdown of Falcons, because that's the whole fucking episode. So, but I do want to ask one thing. Yeah. Since Cologne just finished, right, the obvious question, he's the only person to talk about anyway, is what did you think of Keisuke in his debut?
I think it was fantastic. I think he held up to himself greatly. I think the games they lost, he was in both the games they lost and obviously exited the tournament. He was the one stepping up when he was looking the dice for Falcons. I can't remember who against, but they played Dust 2 against, who did they lose to? I can't remember who it was. Got off to a fantastic
Furia?
Start. I think Kyusuke.
They lost to Mongols and Furia.
Mongols and Furia. It was Furia. It was the second time they played Dust 2, yeah. So Furia, I think he was at 15 kills, 7 rounds into the game. And I thought, okay, game over, you know. And then Furia came back and Falcon started to crumble. He was the only player stepping up. He was the only one actually delivering what was not even expected. He was over-delivering to a certain degree. Against the Mongols as well, that was a fucking shit show of a game on Dust 2. I think Blitz won a unwinnable 1v3 on the B-bomb side. I think Falcon is down, I want to say, 11-5 or maybe 12-7. And then Kyusuke picks up a secondary AWP, and all of a sudden, he's the one getting all the interest. He's the one shutting down the B-bomb side with the AWP all of a sudden. Monacy did nothing, had a horrible game. Nico did nothing, had a horrible game. He was the one, both, you know, fighting from behind, trying to keep them alive, but he was also the one against Furia who made them have a great start of the map, making you think, okay, they're going to win this. And then when he slowed down, no one else picked up. So in all aspects of the game, he was actually the only one delivering, whether that was from the beginning or at the end of the games. And I think as a rookie coming in, you know, maybe struggling a little bit with English, first time on a big stage, I know he said he doesn't feel pressure, blah, 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 blah. It's a massive lie, and it's ridiculous when players do that. I hate it. He delivered. He absolutely delivered. If anything, Nico had a fucking atrocious tournament, the worst event I've ever seen him play, at the very least. Monacy is becoming inconsistent. It almost sounds ridiculous. He was consistently delivering last year, and we always, you know, said to Monacy, the only thing you're going to work on is be consistently a guard, you know. He did that last year. He had a fantastic season. It does feel like this year he's just a little bit inconsistent. He's had great tournaments and he's, you know, obviously when Falcons got into the grand finals in Melbourne as well, he played exceptionally well, but it does feel like Monessi is a little bit more inconsistent than he's been the last year, and that's also showing here at Cologne. And that is two trends I don't like, you know. Monessi and Nico at the major as well, they're not playing well. Like, that needs to be fixed, you know. Nico cannot have another bad tournament. I looked into it as well during Cologne. Right now, Nico is in the worst three-month period he's ever had as a player since 2015. Wow. Like, he has never had a worse three-month period than right now since 2015. And that speaks volume and where he's at right now.
No, by the way, I'm with you. I actually think, bizarrely, considering how ineffective the team was, this is actually one of the best debuts I think I've ever seen, Pimp. Like, I often actually draw comparisons to people like Donk. And actually, I'll even give extra credit to Keisuke. Donk was in his team that he came up in with players he'd played with for a while already the year before 2024. And they're speaking Russian and everything's based on him. But that's not what they did for Keisuke. Yeah, they gave him his spots, I'll give you that. And they made room for him. But like, he's coming into a team where he has to speak English. He even admitted himself after the boot camp meet, he didn't even understand what half the people were saying. Also, that's a totally different culture of a team. I mean, by the way, I'd actually say one of the things Falcons maybe struggle with is, what is the culture of their team? It's just a bunch of really good players getting a giant bag, being told win, 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 which, like, listen, you can make that work at like Real Madrid. These are adult guys at that point. I think in CS, people, that pressure is enormous for some of those players. Like, you could even argue that maybe even don't get to people like Nico. If you're in G2, no one's guts as harsh on him because it's Nico. He's the savior of G2. In some ways, he's the guy shitting the bed in Falcons the last few months, and it's his team. I also think as well that when you look at like the way he played, considering his team was playing like shit, mate, I'm with you. Right, his rifle game is unbelievable. The eye test already checked out for that. But like, his deagle's fucking ridiculous. He could AWP. Like, he actually also seemed like pressure didn't affect him. Like, this is not... Look, I get that he's doing the Zontix, which is like, until you do that really bad fail on the arena, you're going to believe, hey, maybe I'm the one guy in history that pressure doesn't affect. Like, look, everyone said that, mate, and everyone's fallen. Everyone's done the Matrix jump and fought. It happens to everyone. But I tell you what, I can see why he's deluded at the moment, mate. It's working. He is walking on water. It's nuts. So I have to say, that's why I only wanted to do that angle, because look, the Falcons thing we could do in a future episode, because I'm sure they're going to have plenty more tournaments where there are weird angles and sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. But I actually do think the Keisuke one, that's almost like a 10 out of 10 debut, isn't it? What did he do wrong?
Yeah, couldn't have done more. You know, it's probably harsh to say, but the team let him down. You know, yes. I think he did everything he could. As you said, you know, maybe 10 out of 10 debut. Yeah, almost, you know, maybe a 9 out of 10, I'd give it, you know, because you also do have to have impact to win the game, I guess. Sure. And I would have loved to see him in the arena, just at the very least in a quarterfinal, to make it perhaps a 10 out of 10 debut, to see him play well in there as well. But for what he had to work with and for what the team gave him to work with, I think he did as good as he could, you know. Yes. And that's a positive. And I think that's also what Falcons probably are thinking right now, that, you know, Nico is in a bit of a slump. You know, Monessi maybe a little bit too inconsistent compared to where you thought he would be at, but do we believe that Monessi will continue to be inconsistent? Probably not. Do we think Nico will get out of his slump as he's done before, you know, or been consistently better for 8 years or 9 years, as I just described before, the worst period in 9 years? Then if you believe in that, then you also believe in Falcons becoming a super team. So I'm not worried for them. I just think that for their sake, you know, at least for the community's sake, they need a good tournament soon. And if not, then just peak at the major and win the fucking major, which I think they right now would be one of my favorites to do.
Yeah. No, the key thing for me, the takeaway I have from this event is, yes, obviously limited sample size, but being as I already saw the crazy eye test the guy had before he joined this team, the one thing I think you'll have a very hard time arguing about is that it was bad for Falcons to sign him. That seems like a great signing. If anything, the harsh part of this event was, the second this event finished, I just find myself thinking, like, look, first of all, Tessis, I'd just be getting your game nice and crispy for that new teammate, because it's either the bench or a new teammate. That's just what's going to happen. I'm sorry, if you look at the way the team structure is at the moment, like, they're not going to make you have the star roles and Nico give it up, mate. You're just going to be the one who sadly has to look bad on the way out. That's just the way they do it in Falcons, I'm afraid. It's the old rotating an IP fifth spot, I feel like, in that spot. It's, you know, the fucking Master of Dark Arts at Hogwarts. That's being the fifth player in fucking Falcons. And then also, I agree with you though, mate. I'll tell you what, I never thought I'd ever say this in this team, because this team basically broke the bank to get Nico. But after Tessus, the other person who also has to actually look at what's going on is fucking Nico, mate. Because right now, it's only one one event, but I tell you what, Keir Suka played your roles better than you did, mate, which is, I can't believe I'm saying, because you're supposed to be the goat rifler, but like, that's another real discussion there. So no, the problem is, look, the Keir Suka part in isolation is a banger signing. I know it was crazy money and it was all hyped up, but it looks like he can actually live up to the hype, which is impossible. The problem is, and we'll get to this in a future episode, there is so much still to do in Falcons though, to make that a formula that wins you the major. But I'm with you though, mate. Everyone doing that thing now. I don't get why people are still doing this, mate. I get last year why you all were like down on Falcons all the time. Bro, when you look at these players on paper, I'm with you. It's like, am I really predicting that Nico and Modesty fucking suck forevermore? Like, surely at least one of them gets amazing, if not both. I'm with you. Like, this course corrects soon enough, surely. I don't know how, but surely.
Yeah, that's what I feel too. Like, it's bound to happen, you know. And whether that means winning the major, winning trophies, or at least getting in the semifinals or getting in the grand finals, that's the big question. But I mean, you saw what they did with Mackie's last season, you know, let's be honest. And that was without even practicing. You know, they barely practiced when Monty came in, had a couple of practice days and just played it free for all. And maybe that's part of the issue as well. Maybe it worked better for them to have a loose style. I think that is a future episode. But just a comment on that, you know, also from speaking to Peter Dupree, Sonic has a very specific way of running his teams. And one thing that I had the discussion with Peter about is that you really think of it, you know, Sonic has never worked with an op like Monesi before. He's worked with Device throughout his entire career. Very, very different op player, you know, works within a system, buys into a system. You even said to yourself a couple of moments ago. And I think for Sonic, there's also a learning in working with a guy like Monesi. How does Sonic get the most out of Monesi within Team Falcons when he's then trying to make him buy into the system as well? And I think part of why Monesi maybe struggles a little bit and is a little bit inconsistent is that he's making that transition right now. And whether that's the right decision to lock him in a little bit more or make him buy into whatever system they're trying to build or just free him up, I don't know, you know, because you could also argue that you want to give Kiyosuke a lot of freedom and Nico needs a certain amount of freedom. So it is a balance, but that's one thing that Sonic struggled massively with in the first iteration of Falcons when they tried to build the super team as well, when Symbol stood in as well. It was like there was no direction, you know, there was no direction of where this team is heading. Are we becoming a team that plays together? You have Snappy as an in-game leader who's all about, you know, auto spawn calling or simplifying calls, you know, to make sure the players are comfortable in the patterns they run in. They don't have to think for themselves. They don't have to make mid-round decisions. You don't want to take away mid-round decision from Nico. You don't want to take a mid-round decision from Monesi or Kiyosuke for that matter. And I think for me, the biggest question and the only thing that could hold that back is that they'd never find that balance where Sonic actually maybe changes his coaching style a little bit, you know, to accommodate for a complete different team that he's never worked with. Sonic has never had players of that caliber with those, you know, characteristics as player to work with. He was in Astralis, you know, the greatest, maybe still, team of all time, you know, that worked in synergy, had the perfect players in the perfect roles. Falcons are never going to have the perfect players in the perfect roles, but they sure as hell have the most firepower, and that's what he needs to utilize. And that's a question. That's a challenge to Sonic as well. I think he's up for it, obviously. And I think if anyone could do it, it would be him. But he needs to make sure that you get the most out of all the raw firepower, because you cannot play or think Counter-Strike like you did in Astralis with a team like Falcons. That's just going to be a mismatch. And that's what happened with Falcons when Snappy got into the team. You know, the way Snappy is calling, the way he thinks Counter-Strike, and the way Sonic thinks Counter-Strike was just in two different directions. And that's why it never worked out in the first place.
No, by the way, I think you've got something there, because I was even thinking as you were saying it, it's true, because another thing you think about all the teams that Monesi's been in, where they had the success in G2 with Hooksy and then with Snacks, famously, the reason no one gave any of those IGLs credit is because they see it as they just called a loose, simple game. And then the joke is Monesi just did whatever Monesi was going to do. And if it was something amazing, brilliant, we give all the credit to Monesi. Well, if I think about it, Pimp, there's actually two figures that have been in Monesi's career that thus far haven't gotten the same level of success. So in the early days, it was Alexi B, who's been criticized for like, he wants to run a tactical system and you play your role within it and he figures out when the chess piece moves. And then similarly, I agree, Sonic is someone who's built up systems for how to use players and pieces. That's, by the way, had a lot of success. Like, you could even argue he did that in both Vitality and Astralis, like how he got the pieces to work, how he shifted Dupree around, how he made Sphinx eventually functional again. But the question there becomes, either can Zonic adapt to Monesi and can he play a looser style? That's a question in itself. Some people have their own approach to sports, to games, and they bring in the players that suit them. Or is Monesi himself someone who needs more of an open system? Can he adapt himself? You can't know on that one, by the way. Like I said about the discussion about Donk, I think if you'd have taken Nico and Simple from day one and given them one of the best teams and the best agile, they wouldn't have been able to fucking play in that system, mate. They were the guys who had to freelance a bit back then. And also, I'll give a very brief, even though I know this isn't a football one, I'll give an analogy from American football briefly. which is, I'll tell you the cultural reference to make it quick, right? Which is one of the greatest teams ever in the NFL was the Patriots, the one that won a lot of championships. But actually, in an era when they didn't win, they once had a team that was, because they used to be a dynasty from defense, right? But they once had a team in 2007 that actually had the perfect season but lost the Super Bowl. They won every game before that. And one of the reasons why is they had both one of the best defenses and one of the best offenses simultaneously. And one of the reasons they had one of the best offenses is basically they got a player called Randy Moss, who was one of the best wide receivers, which is like the really fast guys that run like super far out and take the long ball. Yeah. And essentially, this guy was one of the all-time great players. And when he came to their team, essentially the coach, who himself had already won Super Bowls and was an amazing defensive coach, he even said, oh, having that player actually taught me how that position can be played. Because essentially before, when he had, I'm assuming just a normal player in that position, he thought of that player again as like a chess piece, like, right, you use him in this way, or, you know, if it's like the perfect setup, then you pass to that guy. Whereas what he obviously learned when he had this guy was, when you're as good as that guy is, you can get the ball every time, mate. It's more about like, run the whole game through that. If anything, you think of the game a way to get him the ball instead of like, if it's the right move. I think that you could, again, I'll tease it, we'll do this in the future, but I think that's maybe the monosyzonic thing there. One of them's going to have to shift to some degree. If they do, by the way, you could imagine the success could be, sky's the limit. But right now, I agree, they may be coming from different like mentalities and different background in how to play CS, because absolutely, you could never say of any Zonic team that it was like Nico go kill or Device go kill that everyone sat back. The opposite of anything, right?
That's the thing as well, because at the end of the day, you know, if you want to be cutthroat with it, you know, it is Sonic who has to change that. Like, at the end of the day, if Monesi doesn't work out on the Falcons, Monesi is not going to be replaced. Like,
he's
too expensive. He's too big of an investment. Same could be said for Kiyosuke. If Sonic doesn't figure him out, you know, at the end of the day, it will have to be Sonic going, because he is, after all, the cheapest investment out of the three, and the guy that is the least expendable or the most expendable. So I'm curious, you know, I have faith in Falcons, and I do think Sonic will figure it out eventually. Maybe it's going to take a little more time than people expect, but as you said, like, you really want to bet against Nico coming back to form, you really want to bet against Monesi, you want to bet against Kiyosuke. I won't, you know, so I think Falcons are going to do just fine.
There you go. We did the Donk versus Siwoo. We had Zonic even be in the future of Falcons. Mouse, why they're not going to win, even though they just have this awesome run and beat Vitek. Congrats on that. We just don't believe you're not going to win anything. And also even the angle of like Kiyosuke. We did it all. So I'll tell you what, we'll go further in CS on the next episode of Counterpoints.